Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Facebook says it is making major changes to its news feed to show users less news and more posts from friends and family. The changes were recently announced in a Facebook post by co-founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The intention is to create more meaningful social interactions for users. He said the company feels a responsibility to make sure our services aren't just fun to use, but also good for people's well-being. The news feed is a collection of posts that includes photos, updates, and links from a user's family and friends. It can also show material from media companies and advertisements. The social media service says it will start prioritizing posts from friends and family in newsfeed. At the same time, it will reduce the amount of material coming from news publishers and companies. The decision came after Facebook was criticized last year for not doing more to prevent false news stories from easily and quickly spreading. Two former Facebook officials also accused the company of creating products that have harmed society. Facebook has been using computer algorithms to predict what material was most likely to be liked, commented on, or shared. But Zuckerberg said that will no longer be the company's goal. He said Facebook product teams have been told to change their methods to get more personal posts to appear in newsfeed. The change is aimed at creating more online connections between individuals. Zuckerberg said that video, media, and other public content had exploded on Facebook in recent years. This resulted in more public material being seen than personal posts in newsfeed. The latest decision was also based on the company's own research, Zuckerberg said. That research showed that when used in certain ways, Facebook can strengthen personal relationships and improve well-being and happiness. Facebook said the research suggested that social media users who spend a lot of time only reading information but not interacting with others reported feeling worse afterward. Those who reported having interactions with others during the experience said it gave them better feelings. Facebook said it cooperated with psychology and mental health experts on several studies that supported the findings. Zuckerberg said even though he expects the changes to result in users spending less time on Facebook, he believes that time will be more valuable. If we do the right thing, I believe that will be good for our community and our business over the long term, he added. The social media giant began running tests of the newsfeed changes in 6 smaller countries last year. In those tests, Facebook users were offered 2 separate feeds. One contained posts from friends and family, while the other included pages a user liked. Several publications in test countries reported a major drop in website traffic due to the newsfeed split. In Slovakia, journalist and social media manager Filip Struharik wrote that the test change resulted in 4 times fewer social interactions on the country's biggest media pages. Similar results were reported in Cambodia and Guatemala, according to social media data company CrowdTangle. The other test countries were Sri Lanka, Bolivia, and Serbia. Some social media experts have said that having fewer news publishers show up in newsfeed will not solve the problem of false news spreading on Facebook. They warn the change could actually increase such reports, which can be posted by a user's family or friends and then shared widely. The experts also believe it may now be more difficult for Facebook users to find links to reliable news and official sources. I'm Brian Lynn.
A new report warns that democratic values are weakening in countries around the world. The report found that values such as fair elections and freedom of the press have worsened in each of the past 12 years. The findings are from Freedom House, an American-based non-governmental organization. Freedom House works in support of political freedom and democracy worldwide. While the group is independent, some of its money comes from the United States government. For the new report, researchers studied information about conditions in 195 countries over the past year. Freedom House rated 88 of those countries as free. 58 others received a partly free rating. It identified 49 countries as not free. Arch Puddington is a researcher with Freedom House. He said that the study confirmed a drop in political freedoms in each of the past 12 years.
For the 12th consecutive year, freedom was on the decline across the globe. And by that, we mean that there are more countries, in the case of 2017, many more countries that showed declines in freedom than showed improvements.
Freedom House reported a weakening of the United States as a leader of democracy in 2017. It said that America's standing was affected in part by reports of Russian involvement in the 2016 presidential election. U.S. government officials are investigating possible ties between Russia and aides to then-presidential candidate Donald Trump. There are problems with the elections that you don't find in most well-established democracies, said Arch Puddington. He noted the large amounts of money spent on U.S. election campaigns and state laws making voting more difficult. In written comments, Freedom House pointed to ethical concerns facing the administration of President Donald Trump. It said they include the Trump's family's business ties and the possibility for conflicts of interest, as well as the president's decision not to release information about his taxes. The administration has noted an ongoing investigation by tax experts as a reason for not releasing Trump's tax returns.
The Freedom House report noted the intensification of repression under Chinese leader Xi Jinping as a reason for China's generally downward move and not free rating. We've noticed efforts by China to influence the way other countries deal with China, talk about China, what scholars write about China, what journalists write about China, said Puddington. He added that the report noted a kind of creeping policy of trying to expand Chinese restrictions to China's neighbors and other countries, such as Australia, Canada, and even the United States. Yet Freedom House researchers praised what they consider continued signs of political development for South Korea and the island of Taiwan. The report described Myanmar, also known as Burma, as partly free. Researchers said their findings on the country are mixed. They noted its move from military rule toward democracy and a worsening humanitarian crisis following the movement of Rohingya Muslims to neighboring Bangladesh.
Even with economic and political unrest in Nicaragua and Venezuela, Freedom House welcomed political developments in other Latin American countries. In 2017, Lenin Moreno took office as Ecuador's president. Freedom House noted how Moreno has canceled some of the measures that former President Rafael Correa put in place. Puddington praised Moreno for showing a willingness to have serious discussions with reformists and to take legal action against officials accused of corruption. The report noted increased U.S. involvement with Cuba's government and the Cuban people. Yet Freedom House rated Cuba as not free in the report. It said freedom of the press and open political debate are two areas in need of improvement. Following the ouster of Robert Mugabe as Zimbabwe's longtime leader, Freedom House listed the country as partly free. Arch Puddington explained the rating.
Zimbabwe declined in our scores for 2017, but this was largely due to the fact that, President Mugabe was pushed out by non-democratic means, and he was succeeded through non-democratic means.
I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the presidency of Andrew Jackson. Jackson took office in 1829. He was popular with many voters. They saw him as the symbol of the common man. But Jackson's first term seemed to be mostly a political battle with his vice president, John C. Calhoun. As his presidency went on, another struggle began. This time, it was Jackson against the Bank of the United States. The first Bank of the United States had closed in 1811. But without a central bank, the country's finances had suffered during the War of 1812. So in 1816, Congress provided money to establish the Second Bank of the United States. The bank could provide loans, pay bills, collect taxes, and move money around the country. Congress gave the bank a charter to do business for 20 years. The government owned one-fifth of the bank. A small group of private citizens owned the rest. Lawmakers gave the bank enormous power. The Bank of the United States had $35 million in capital. Some of that money came from the government. Most came from investors. Historian Bray Hammond notes that at the time, the Bank of the United States was the richest corporation in the world. The Bank of the United States also printed the country's paper money, and it was the only bank permitted to have offices across the nation. By making it easy or difficult for businesses to borrow money, the bank's owners could control the economy in almost any part of the United States.
What this means is that you are granting, and Congress did grant, exclusive privileges to the Bank of the United States, which meant exclusive money-making opportunities to its stockholders.
Historian Daniel Feller explains that the Bank of the United States helped the government to do its business effectively and efficiently. But it also helped the people who owned stock in the bank. During Jackson's presidency, a man named Nicholas Biddle led the Bank of the United States. Biddle was an extremely intelligent man. He had completed his studies at the University of Pennsylvania when he was only 13 years old. When he was 18, he was sent to Paris as secretary to the American minister. During America's war with Britain in 1812, Biddle helped establish the Bank of the United States. He became its president when he was only 37 years old. Biddle clearly understood his power as president of the Bank of the United States. In his mind, the government had no right to interfere in any way with the bank's business. President Jackson did not agree, nor was he very friendly toward the bank. Not many people from Western states were. They did not trust the bank's paper money. They wanted to deal in gold and silver. Jackson criticized the bank in each of his yearly messages to Congress. He said the Bank of the United States was dangerous to the liberty of the people. He said the bank could build up or pull down political parties through loans to politicians. Jackson opposed giving the bank a new charter. He proposed that a new bank be formed as part of the Treasury Department. The president urged Congress to consider the future of the bank long before the bank's charter was to end in 1836. Then, if the charter was rejected, the bank could close its business slowly over several years. Changing the banking system slowly, Jackson said, would prevent serious economic problems for the country. But the bank's president wanted to renew the charter early. He made the request in January 1832, 9 months before the next presidential election. Jackson's opponent, Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky, was sure that the issue of the bank could win him some votes. Clay argued his case on the floor of the Senate for 3 days. He strongly urged the Senate to renew the bank's charter. He said the country was in the middle of a revolution, not yet a bloody revolution, but things were happening that pointed to a total change of the pure Republican character of the government. Power was being centered in the hands of one man, he said. He meant President Jackson. Clay added that if Congress did not act, the government would fail. Clay then asked the Senate to condemn Jackson, saying he violated the Constitution and the nation's laws. The Senate approved the resolution. The chief opponent to the bank was Senator Thomas Hart Benton of Missouri. He objected to the renewal of the charter, he told the Senate, because the bank was too great and powerful and made the rich richer and the poor poorer. The Senate finally voted on the bank's new charter. The vote was 28 for renewal and 20 against. The House voted 3 weeks later. It also approved the charter, 107-85. The lawmakers sent the bill to the White House. President Jackson debated it with members of his cabinet. Some wanted to negotiate a compromise, but Jackson decided to veto the bill in the strongest possible language. On July 10, 1832, Jackson sent a message to Congress explaining his reasoning. Jackson said he did not believe the bank's charter was constitutional. Jackson also spoke of the way the bank moved money from west to east. He said the bank was owned by a small group of rich men, mostly in the east. Some of the owners, he said, were foreigners. Much of the bank's business was done in the West. The money paid by Westerners for loans went into the pockets of the Eastern bankers. Jackson said this was wrong. Then the president spoke of his firm belief in the rights of the common man. It is to be regretted, he said, that the rich and powerful bend the acts of the government to their own purposes. Jackson said that instead, the government should shower its favors, as heaven does its rain, on the high and low alike, on the rich and the poor equally. Jackson's veto of the bank bill may have cost him votes among the wealthy, but it earned him votes among the common people, like farmers and laborers. He easily won re-election in November of 1832. Martin Van Buren became his vice president. Historian Daniel Feller says Jackson believed his victory meant that Americans supported his policies including the bank veto.
He had a very popular personal image. It's possible he would have been reelected by the same margin or larger anyway. The one thing we can say looking forward is that when later on you had somebody carrying on Jackson's policies absolutely faithfully without Jackson's personal charisma, he proved to be not nearly so popular.
In his second term, Jackson stopped putting federal money into the Bank of the United States. Instead, he put the money into state banks. The bank president, Nicholas Biddle, fought with all his power to keep the bank open. He demanded that borrowers immediately repay their loans. Businesses struggled without the bank's assistance. Workers lost their jobs. Biddle blamed President Jackson for the financial panic. Critics of Jackson's bank policy called him King Andrew the First. But as time passed, business people began to see that the Bank of the United States was being much tighter in its money policy than was necessary. They began to feel that it was the bank's president, not Jackson, who was responsible for the serious economic situation in the country. Biddle took no responsibility for the financial crisis. He then made a very bad decision. Biddle asked the governor of Pennsylvania to make a speech supporting the bank. At the same time, Biddle refused to lend the state of Pennsylvania $300,000. The governor was furious. Instead of making a speech supporting the bank, he made one that sharply criticized it. 2 days later, the governor of New York proposed that the state sell $4 or $5 million of stock for loans to help state banks. The New York legislature approved selling even more. Strengthening state banks helped break the power of the Bank of the United States. Nicholas Biddle began to see that the battle was lost. He started making more loans to businesses. The economic panic slowly ended. Jackson's victory over the Bank of the United States was clear. Biddle started to lose the support of many members of Congress. In the House of Representatives, James Polk proposed 4 resolutions about the bank. One said the bank should not get a new charter in 1836. The second resolution said government money should not be deposited in the bank. The third said the government should continue to put its money in state banks. And the fourth proposed an investigation of the bank and the reasons for the economic panic in the country. All 4 of these anti-bank resolutions were approved. One of Biddle's aides described the feelings of bank officials. "This day," he said, "should be ripped from the history of the Republic." He said the President of the United States had seized the public treasury and the representatives of the people had approved it. Jackson won what he himself considered a glorious triumph. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.